Hey, welcome back to Yank the Limey, everybody.
Hi, everybody. How you doing, Christy?
Today I'm doing good, I have to say. How are you?
Well, I think we had a pretty special treat yesterday, didn't we?
We did. Yeah. It was so nice. Do you want to tell them?
Sure. We had a staycation. We had a night at Saint-Andrea, which is near Petra.
Yeah, just outside of Petra.
And it's an agro-tourist hotel. That is absolutely stunning. We have been there before because we interviewed the owners, Nick and Deborah.
Mid-June, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they very kindly invited us to stay the night. And we had a ball. It was amazing. And I don't know about you, but I know it was only one night, but it kind of feels as though we've had a sort of mini holiday.
It was an escape, wasn't it? It really was.
Yeah.
So we got there, we had an hour by the pool in the evening.
Yeah.
And you know, just at sunset and, you know, and then a little pick for dinner.
And we had a cocktail with Deborah and Nick and some nibbles. And then we went up to our room, which is a suite with the most enormous balcony, overlooking this beautiful view.
The royalty balcony.
Oh, it really was the royalty balcony. And we just had a ball, didn't we? It was just really fun and relaxing.
The full moon rising last night.
That moon was incredible.
And waking up this morning and going, okay, coffee by the pool.
Yeah, swim.
It was just sort of it was a nice little escape. It wasn't even 24 hours we were there, gone, but it does feel like, you know, we had a nice long weekend for some reason.
It really does. And I think I remember getting slightly hysterical on the balcony looking at this enormous red moon that was sort of rising up over the palm trees.
Oh, so beautiful.
And we had some really funny conversations,
didn't we?
I mean, I think the one that I really remember was you asking when you sort of discovered or asked about God as a child,
right?
You know? And that was quite funny, wasn't it?
I find it fascinating, you know, when do people sort of come into that realization of like, wait a second, how did we get here?
Yeah.
What is this place?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like there's just a moment of consciousness. And the first thing you do is you go ask your mom or your dad or whoever.
Yeah.
For me, it was my mom. I think I was around seven.
Yeah.
And I went and I said, so that was it. Like, so how do we get here? And I was really curious to understand. And she was basically, well, I believe it's God. A lot of people believe we got here, that God made us. But not everybody believes that. She sort of left it open for me. But then I just remember, like, literally having this image in my head of a guy in, like, this workshop closet up in the clouds.
Yeah.
The guy looks like Richie Valens for some reason.
Right.
And he's, like, making little people out of clay and dropping them down onto the earth.
It
was, like, my image of God.
But I think, as I said to you last night, I remember you saying this. And me saying that's a very Greek mythology kind of view of
it,
you know, the gods making humans and pitting them against each other and, you know, taking an interest in being a bit, you know, it's that kind of the other looking down and playing with human foibles is quite interesting.
It is interesting.
Know? I remember very clearly having to go to Sunday school, which was incredibly boring. And obviously raised Protestant, as 90% of British are. And I remember seeing in a Catholic church a crucifix with Jesus on it, which you don't have in Protestant churches. You don't have the figure of Jesus on it. And being absolutely horrified by it, really disturbed by it. And I remember coming home and telling my grandmother about it. And she said, why are you upset? And I told her. And she said, well, I'm here to tell you, all Catholics are willfully deceived. Jesus was not nailed to the cross. They used sellotape. So don't you worry about it, darling. And I went to bed quite comforted with that thought that, you know, he was sellotaped to the cross.
And what did your mom tell you when you asked? How old were you? And, like, how did you...
I don't remember really asking about God particularly.
Or how we got here.
But I can remember asking how humans got here. And I remember, I think my mother was, you know, sipping a gin and tonic at the time. She said, "Oh, darling, that's a very, very big question, and perhaps not suitable for dinner time." But, you know, I do think you're right, there's a point in every child's life where you start thinking, hang on a minute, how did this all happen?
Yeah, you know? I remember very vividly that moment. I remember where I was standing on the front lawn of the house, and I remember the color of the sky and the tree, and I remember very going, wait, this is weird, like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And I also, you know, I don't have any children, but if a child ever asked me that, I wonder what I would say.
I think it would depend what sort of mood I was in. Do you know what I mean? I think all of that depends on so much, doesn't it?
I think would turn the question around. I would say, well, what do you think?
And that's horrible for an 8-year-old. They want firm answers,
don't
they?
It's true. True. Yeah. God, that would be a hard question.
Yeah. And we also spoke about knickers last night, which made me laugh. Because in America...
knickers.
It's panties, right?
Yeah, it's panties.
Panties.
How we got onto that conversation,
I don't know. I don't know, but it's knickers in England.
Underwear. And where does knickers
come from? Well, apparently it comes from knickerbockers, which are those sort of knee-length bloomers. And I suppose if you chop the thighs off them, you're chopping half the word off. So instead of knickerbocker, it's knickers.
Knickerbocker sounds like a German name.
No, knickerbockers were like a long bloomer.
Long bloomers.
That sort of ended at the knee.
And no, but then you also said that they had a slit so that you could squat under your Victorian skirt to...
Have a pee. I know. We had some really interesting conversations there. And I think we touched on aliens as well.
Because you said, look at that star, and I said, that's Mars.
Yeah.
And then somehow we got on to aliens.
And I think the question was, if an alien ship arrived, would you get on it?
And said, come on, let's go.
Yeah, I'd definitely go. Definitely. Unless they were really, really scary. And then perhaps, but you might not have a choice in it. But if you were invited, I think they're going to be quite nice if they're going
to
invite you somewhere.
To the spaceship for some tea.
I'd love to, darling. Thank you so much. I think it'd be.
Could you get me back by, could you go answer my questions about God, please? And then I need to be back because my poor dog, I miss my dog. And
I mean, I'm a huge science fiction fan. Film-wise.
Me too. Me too. I love it.
Not reading it, but watching it.
Watching it.
Yeah.
Yes. So, some of it's readable, but watching it is great.
Reading is usually pretty bloody awful, actually. But watching it is my favourite.
Yeah.
Yeah. A good science fiction movie is the best, isn't it?
It's true. And series. And they don't... Honestly, I eat them up. They don't have enough of them. You know? There's one that's called... I think it's called Another Life.
Okay.
And it's...
Oh, I've seen it. It's good.
It's so good.
It's good, isn't it?
Starbuck from the most modern version of Battlestar Galactica, and she's running this. And there's been two seasons.
No, it's
really
good.
And I'm like, where's the third season? Yeah. I need it.
I know.
Yeah. And I'm rewatching... I have to rewatch Star Trek Next Generation.
Okay.
But this time it's cool because... You know, I watched it growing up, and you just sort of saw it when it was on.
Yeah.
I never watched it in order.
Yeah.
Now with Netflix, I can watch from season one, episode one, in
Captain
order.
Captain Picard has got to be the best captain ever.
I know, he's so great.
Make it so. Earl Grey, black. I mean, I just love him.
No. Earl Grey, hot.
Oh, hot. Yes. Earl Grey, hot. Yeah. No, love it.
Yeah.
Can I tell you about the book?
Yeah, tell us about the book.
Well,
first let's announce we have a great interview today.
Yeah, we do. We've got Graham Bartlett, who we're going to talk to later, who very cleverly has created a fantastic job for himself. But I'll let
him tell
us about that.
Okay.
Yeah, he's great. But the book, I'm still on the... I think everyone is broke, excuse me, at the moment. So I'm on the bargain books.
Right.
Right? So when you go onto your Kindle, and they'd have the Kindle daily deals, they also have, you know, something like 1,000 books for 99p. Most of them are pretty awful, really. But you do get some really good ones.
Some little treasures.
Yeah, some treasures. This is a book, I have to be honest, if it was £8.99, I wouldn't have bought it. But because it is 99 pence, which is less than a euro.
Yeah, you're right then.
I'll buy it. So it's called The Followers. It's a bit of a dystopian, twisty book, which I quite like. It's not horrific. It's not ghastly. But there is something that happens in the modern world, which they are calling the spill. And it means the complete cessation of anything that's plugged in. So no laptops, no phones, no cameras, no TV. There's electricity, but nothing works. Nothing.
Okay.
So basically, terrorism has taken over. So your phone is turned off, and people are completely bewildered. They don't know what is the hell is going on. And then gradually, these things start happening. And it's like, oh, hang on a minute. So something that you have done in the past that is committed somehow to either email or text or voicemail or something gets sent out to everyone. Your medical notes, your anything gets sent out. So the whole world changes. And how it decides it's going to write itself, of course, this is so reality TV, I cannot tell you. They build, over the terrible fires in California, a village. And the village is called Constellation. And it's 2051. And Marlo and her mother, Floss, have been handpicked to live their lives on camera in the closed community of Constellation. Unlike her mother, who adores the spotlight, Marlo hates having her every move judged by national audience. But she isn't brave enough to escape until she discovers a shattering secret about herself. So basically, this Constellation village is, it's the national sport to watch this village on TV.
Because you're watching everybody's everything.
Uh-huh. And the writers, the directors, will guide the plot line depending on how many followers you get and how many likes you get. So Marlo has something like 67 billion people watching her, you know, clean her teeth. And yeah, I mean, it's
sounds
scary.
Like an episode of Black Mirror.
Well, that's how exactly this book has been described. It's been described by Think Black Mirror with a comic twist.
Ooh, interesting.
It is interesting. It's one of those books that, as I said, if it was £8.99, I don't think I would have bought it. But for 99p, I'm willing to take a punt on it. And
you're glad you did.
Have a look. I'm glad I did. It certainly kept me entertained. Yeah.
Cool.
It's well worth it.
So it's obviously a recent book.
Very new. Yeah, very new. It's just one of those things that I think you start reading it and you sort of get hooked on it, really. It's clever, you know? It's very clever.
And who's the author?
It is Megan Angelo.
Okay.
American woman, quite young, I think. I think this might be her first book, I'm not sure. And it's called Followers by Megan Angelo. And a dystopian view of how we're all going to hell in a handcart, really.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And just like to remind everybody to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and me and us on Instagram. Yeah. Or wherever you can. Just follow us.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, we'll all end up in Constellation.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So what wine are we going to drink, Christy?
Well, we're having a Verdejo.
Oh, my favorite.
It is. I know it's your favorite, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a 5 o'clock wine.
It's a 5 o'clock wine.
Which most Verdejos are, to be honest.
Yeah.
This one actually is, I was sort of expecting it to be just your average Verdejo. And it's about 6.5 euros a bottle from, you know, retail. So in a restaurant you'd pay twice as much, at least. But it's really, really nice. Mm. It's like a deep Verdejo, I would like to call it. It's called Viñas Altas. It's 2019 from the Rueda region. And I, you know, sometimes Verdejos just kind of lose something. They just kind of go away. And this one sort of, it stays with you. It's got
lemon, lime
citrus.
Yeah, definitely.
It's got some herbaceousness in it. I want to say like a fennel or, some sort of a greenness to it. And it's got depth. So it sort of just sits on your tongue, and then after you swallow, it sort of lingers. So it's sort of one that you can sip slowly.
Yeah,
and I think this would go great with a nice seafood. You know, anything.
I wish you hadn't mentioned seafood. I haven't had seafood for quite a long time, really, and I really want some.
What would you have?
I'd like some big, fat, juicy prawns.
I want lobster.
Oh, it goes without saying, for sure.
No, I wouldn't have this with lobster. I would have something a little more rich. This would be good with, like, sushi or a lot of seafood. Lobster, you want something a little bit richer than that. But I have to say, we were having micheladas earlier.
Oh, they were good.
They finally did the micheladas. Oh, it was so good. Lemon and on ice and beer with salt around the rim. Uh-huh. You put in some spice in yours. And as soon as I took a few sips, the first thing I thought of is I want ceviche.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Because it takes me back to my Costa Rica days.
Of course.
And so michelada and a ceviche goes really well together. And that being said, this would go well with a tuna or the ceviche or one of those tartars, you know, something like that.
Really good, actually.
It's really nice. Vinhas Altas. And honestly, I have no idea where I bought this. I left it in your refrigerator at one point, and
I think you bought it from Bip.
Maybe. I showed up without a wine tonight, and I was like, I'm going to run to the wine shop. You're like, no, there's one in here. Yeah. And here it was. Oh, really? Okay. It's nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, Verdejos, they can be really short and so sometimes over acidic. This has it all. This is crispy, and I would definitely buy this one again.
Yeah, me too. It's so very nice.
Highly recommended.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I was going to tell you, do you remember a couple years ago when I made this ridiculous art project?
Yes, the snail project.
Adopt a Snail Art and Compassion Project.
Uh-huh.
Well, it went pretty well, you know, after a couple years. There was someone who
was foolish
adopted
enough.
A snail,
yeah,
and compassionate enough, I'd like to say,
okay,
to support an artist, and you know, and it was not expensive.
Have you relaunched it, Christy?
I've relaunched it, and I've upped the price.
Wow, what's the price?
Well, it was €6, and now it's closer to 600.
And what do you get for €600, Christy?
€600, you adopt a snail, and it's an endangered type of snail, actually. I just found that out. I didn't know that when I did this. But these are endangered snails, so it's actually really important. Also, artists are endangered, like myself. So you can adopt a snail, and I will do a little snail tattoo for you if you want it. And it can be sort of whatever sort of art you want. So, yes, I'll paint your snail shell. It'll be marked and monitored and loved and put in the best part of the garden to eat all at once. And
I love that. I love the idea. And how would people find this, Christy?
Wineandworldviews.com, adopt a snail.
That's hilarious.
Now, if you get the deluxe, there's like sort of three tiers. So you can just adopt a snail. You can name it. I send you a certificate by email that you can print up, and you can name it after a loved one.
No, by snail mail.
You know, that's the third option.
Oh, okay.
And that third option with snail mail, you get a bottle of wine with it as well.
I think it's a bargain.
I mean,
I really do.
Yes, and you get the certificate, and you get pictures of your snails, and
do you
your
know
snail
what?
Gets loved,
I would
and
so
your supporting artist.
Would so love it if it took off. I mean, there have been madder things on the internet, so who knows?
I know. I mean, look at how much people are raising for, you know, people who shoot people. I'm thinking, well let's support the arts. And I thought €6 was really, you know, if I could sell 100,000. You know, adopt a snail. I don't know how I would take care of 100,000 snails. So I'm making it more realistic for me.
Fair enough.
And
yeah, I like it.
You know, instead of, you know, that yeah. many snails.
Listen, I wish you the absolute best with it.
Thank you.
Just before we go, I've got to say a really big happy birthday to Sue, Jugglebury Sue. Sue
Jugglebury
Popper.
Sue! Happy birthday!
Happy birthday, yeah. Let's clink our glasses to Sue. She was meant to be here for her birthday.
Oh, that's right.
But, of course, due to the wretched quarantine and COVID and all sorts of awful things that have been going on, she can't be here, but I know that she really wants to be. So happy birthday, Sue. We're thinking of you.
Happy birthday, Sue. We're totally thinking of you. We're going to come back after a quick break with
Greg Bartlett.
Yep. And we got on the subject of crime.
Yeah.
Before we talk to him, I want to know if you were to, you know, commit a crime, what would it be? What would you be willing to make it worth it?
I think it would be, I'd love to be in one of those sort of Ocean 13 massive bank robberies.
Oh, really clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
And where you sort of end up in a sort of fabulous getaway car with your best mates and sort of, you know, £50 notes are flying out of the window and you come away with millions and millions and millions. Because, frankly, I think robbing a bank, yeah, you know, like, I don't have any...
They're insured.
Yeah, I'm not... Do you know what I mean? I think that would be...
I would like to, like, find some really horrible, rich human being who just deserves to be blackmailed.
Ooh.
And just really cleverly blackmail
That's
somebody.
That's a tricky one.
Yeah. It is a tricky one, but I would feel justified about it.
Oh, really?
Like, I would feel like, well, you know, they don't really deserve all that money. Not going to take it all anyway. Just going to get enough to, you know, get by.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'll shut up about their...
Okay, you do the blackmail and I'll do the bank.
And you'll do the heist.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll help you with the heist.
Yeah, fair enough. You'd have to be the getaway driver.
Definitely, because you're not doing that.
No, I'm so not doing that. No.
Okay, well, let's see if we can get some advice from our...
From Graham. Yeah.
All right, guys.
See you in a minute.
See you in a bit.
So, going to welcome our guest onto our podcast, Graham Bartlett from Brighton. Hi, Graham. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
How are you?
Thanks for joining us, my lovely. Well, we're okay. We've been having a few sort of discussions about which books to recommend this week.
Right.
And it's really great that you've come on the podcast for us, because would you give us a bit of background as to what you actually do, Graham? Because I find it fascinating.
Okay, well, I'm a former police officer. I used to be a detective. I retired back in 2013, and as I was actually the police commander for Brighton and Hove, but most of my career was a detective. And I kind of stumbled into becoming a writer with a chap that many people will know, Peter James.
I can't believe there's anyone on this reading circuit that hasn't heard of Peter James. So absolutely.
No, I would hope not.
Yeah, exactly.
He certainly works hard to make sure that happens.
Doesn't he just? Yeah.
He's a lovely fella. So I wrote a book with Peter, which is a non-fiction, which is really the stories behind the Roy Grace novels.
Yeah.
And then I've written another one subsequently to that called Babes in the Wood. But in the meantime, because I've been one of Peter's advisors on policing for a number of years, I kind of stumbled again into a career which I didn't even know existed, which is I'm a police procedural advisor to authors and TV writers. So I run courses, I provide one-to-one advice, I review scripts and manuscripts for anyone really writing crime fiction.
Fantastic.
In an effort to help them get their police procedure, their police characters, their crime, their terminology accurate.
Yeah.
Or as accurate as their story needs it to be.
Sure.
And I always say that the story is more important than the procedure. So we always work very hard to keep the story intact.
Yeah. What a brilliant job you've carved out for yourself.
I mean, it's not like work at all.
It's fantastic, isn't it? So There's a couple of things I'm dying to ask you about. I mean, in all your years of policing, you must have seen some pretty dreadful things, right? But all the crime books I've read recently, sometimes, something jars on you and you're thinking, I don't think that can be right. And my friend Christy, who's the Yank that I run we do the podcast together, said that I phoned her once and said, how long would it take to dig a grave? She was like, oh my God, what have you done? I said, no. I was thinking about writing this scene into it because I saw something, I think, in a film, and I thought, that's not humanly possible. It must take ages to dig a grave, you know? I mean, depending, obviously, sure, the state of the ground and where it is. But it's not just done in half an hour, is it? That's a really big effort required for that. And I think those clangers in films and books where they get it wrong, you can spot it, can't you?
Yeah.
You know,
I'm the world's worst person to watch any crime drama with, or to sit next to when I'm reading a crime novel, because you're absolutely right, Laura. It's so frustrating that some of the basics are just people. You know, they don't necessarily have to come on to someone like me who does this for a living. You know, they can
do a bit of research,
Google those things, and you can find out. You know, for example, in policing, what people would get charged with if they committed a certain offence, or how long a forensic process takes.
So, Graham, the one question I'm sort of really anxious to ask you, if there is such a thing, if you can answer it, what would be the perfect murder that you could get away with? What do you think that, you know, if you were going to write this crime book, where you wanted the murder to be absolutely, they're never going to get caught. How are they going to do it?
Are you sure you're asking this for creative purposes? Because I don't want to be involved in any conspiracy here.
The ex-husband is under the patio, don't worry.
Well, you need to move in quickly because that's the worst place.
Oh, is it?
Do you know what? If you were setting a novel back in the 80s, I would say that the chances of committing an almost undetectable murder would be greater than now.
Really?
Because, I mean, the first thing obviously is that, you know, you have to cover your tracks and you have to leave as little evidence as possible. And of course, in this day and age, you know, We all carry mobile phones. Yeah. We all use electronic banking, or most people do, social media, the internet. We drive cars that have got tracking systems in them, whether we know it or not.
Yeah.
There's CCTV everywhere. So it's very, very difficult to commit a crime where you are completely confident that you're not going to be found out. And of course, the forensics now are just astonishing.
It's amazing, isn't it?
So I would say, for creative purposes, set the book back in the 80s.
Yes.
Where
no mobile phones. And what about...
Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, what about at sea? Because I always figure at sea, you know, you could... So I'm thinking of The Talented Mr. Ripley and that great scene where they're grappling on the boat and he just sort of drops him over, and you're thinking, well, no one's going to see you, are they? It's your word against, you know, he fell over, he fell off, I tried to rescue him, you know.
There is all that, but I mean, that would be an option,
right.
But you know, you then have to think about what the forensic pathology might show, you know, signs of a struggle.
Yeah.
You know, so signs of some kind of pre-murder fight or something on the boat that indicates that there'd been a falling out. So you'd have to be very, very careful. But I think you can also be too clever and try and cover your steps too cleverly. So I'll give an example. So I talked a minute ago about mobile phones and the internet, and people will instinctively think, well, actually, you know, I know the police can track my movements by my mobile phone, so I'm going to have my mobile phone off, and then they won't know where I am. But what's more suspicious than somebody who never, ever, ever turns their mobile phone off?
Yeah.
Suddenly
turns it off.
The police find that it's off.
Yeah.
You know, between the hours of the murder.
Yeah.
And then it's back on again.
Yeah.
You know, that. So all these things, you know, it's about proving positives and negatives, and you know, all these things make it very, very difficult. So I would just say don't go around killing people.
Yeah. Oh, that's always a given. That's a top tip. Yeah. I've been looking at your website, Graham, and really fascinating. So you do crime writing classes, right?
I do. No, I do.
That's fantastic. So
I work with an organisation called the Professional Writing Academy,
uh-huh.
who are just fabulous. I mean, they support lots of writing courses, and they provide all the infrastructure and all the IT, the virtual learning environments. And I provide the content and deliver the courses. So we've done a few now. We did one on a one-day workshop on covert policing and intelligence.
Right.
We ran a fantastic weekend, which was called Solving a Murder, the First 48 Hours. And we're actually running it again on the 9th to the 11th of October.
Brilliant.
And what we do is we have a crime scene, which basically involves my son looking very dead on the floor in a part of my house. And we have some information that goes with that. So I've got a real police officer being dispatched by a real controller. We get some information from an informant, and that's the beginning of the weekend. And so the weekend starts, they have a crime scene, And it's up to them then to design a story around that. And over the course of the weekend, it's really intensive. We will feed information in at particular times, at a time when they would get that information. So they're not getting all the DNA evidence on day one. They're not getting any results from press appeals until further on in the investigation. But all the time, it's their story. And there's writing tasks that go on. There's web chats, Q&As with a psychologist and with a scene to crime officer and with me. And it all culminates on the Sunday to them writing 1,500 words of their first piece.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. And how would people get in contact with you to do this, Graham?
Well, if they contact me through my website, which is www.policeadvisor, which is OR, that version, .co.uk, you can see the courses on the front page, or you can send me a message, sign up to my newsletter. So we've got that course on the 9th to the 11th of October.
But right.
On Saturday, on the 12th of September, we're running a one-day workshop on custody and interviewing. So we're going to have a custody officer talking to us. We're going to have a murder detective interviewer, and we're going to have a web chat with the solicitor.
Nice.
So we're going to take people what I call behind the cell door, find out what happens after the handcuffs have snapped shut.
Is it true, do you think, that when one is being interviewed by the police, there's a sort of Mr. Nice and Mr. Nasty? Does that play out in real life?
No, it doesn't. Although there are some very clever tactics which we will go into on the course, but the essentially, it's all about psychology. So, you know, if you and I were going in to interview somebody, I might say, well, you might say, I'll take the lead because I think I've got the best rapport with this person.
Right.
So you might start the interview and I'm sort of playing second fiddle, maybe throwing a few questions in. And then it might then appear that actually that person is responding better to my questions than your questions. So, because we will be trained in this, and we'll be doing this all the time, we will know to hand over. So we won't make it obvious, but you'll kind of maybe say to me, or you know, Graham, did you want to come in on that point? And that will be my trigger then to then take the lead in the interview.
To get in,
And of course, you know, it's not in anyone's interest to fall out with the person, however heinous their crime, because actually you want them to tell the truth. So,
of course,
you know, you can work out with them.
That must be hard. Yeah. I can't imagine what that must be like, really, if you're sitting opposite someone who you know has done something absolutely unspeakable. To try and keep that professional distance, it must be tough, you know.
Well, you know, I've in my career, I've sat across the table from a number of child rapists, you know, people that rape children. And, you know, you just have to keep in your mind that, you know, if you don't remain professional, then you're not going to deliver justice for that poor child. So, you know, it's all very, you know, you could easily blow your top and, you know, start telling the person, you know, what a dreadful individual they are and, you know, all that. But actually, all you're doing is a disservice to the victim, and, and you know, you're there to do a job, and you have to keep your emotions in check.
I mean, the one interview that I would give anything to be a fly on the wall for at the moment is the Ghislaine Maxwell case coming up in New York. I mean, imagine the deals that are going on there, and the interviews, and what they're discovering, and what they're allowed to talk about, what they're not allowed to. It must be so complex. You know, my head is spinning at the thought of it, really.
I'm absolutely sure it would be. And of course, the, you know, the US law, legislation and procedure is very different from ours. But, you know, there will be a lot of, I would imagine that they would be very, very stage managed and rehearsed interviews.
Right.
With, as you say, a lot of, you know, a lot of arrangements and agreements happening behind the scenes,
deals being made,
attorney, and lawyers, and there frankly isn't so much of that in the UK.
No, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on this, because obviously the podcast is The Yank and the Limey. I'm the Limey, Chris is the Yank, and we always end up talking about guns, really. Mm. And Christy is sort of slightly astonished that, you know, English police do not carry guns.
Not routinely, no.
No, not routinely at all. What's your thoughts on this, Graham?
I am of the school that I don't think... I think it would really harm the character of British policing if we were to routinely carry guns. I, having said that, I can see it happening. I can see...
Can you?
In my lifetime, I can see... Yeah, I absolutely can. But I think it would be a sad step. I mean, you know, that we have very specialist firearms officers that are available 24/7, that you know, generally meet the demand. Non-armed officers carry taser, they carry pepper spray, they carry batons and that sort of thing. So they have all the less lethal options. And I think it would break down that bond there is between the police and the community.
I completely agree with
every
you.
Every officer was carrying guns. You know, and I say that my son's just joined the police.
Oh, has he?
You know, I absolutely want him to be, you know, protected and have the best, you know, the best facilities to do that. But I wouldn't want to see him carrying a gun, and that's not through fear about what might happen to him if he's carrying a gun. I just think it's certainly not the police service that I joined.
No.
But I can understand why in some communities it's necessary.
Other than Peter James, who is a very dear writer and certainly a fantastic ambassador for Brighton, who is one of your, what's your favourite sort of top reads for criminal activity in books? Who would you recommend reading?
Do you know what? It's one that I've recently discovered, and I'm absolutely addicted to M.W. Craven.
Oh, okay.
He's a Cumbrian writer.
Right.
His name's Mike Craven. And he writes the most fabulous character-led thrillers where they're police procedural. So he has this character who's a detective sergeant in the National Crime Agency, who's unashamedly rogue. You know, he's gone completely rogue, and he has this DI that tries to keep him in check. And then his sidekick is a phenomenally intelligent analyst who has absolutely no social skills whatsoever.
So
a bit
on the spectrum.
Yeah, most certainly on the spectrum. Yeah, this is her first job outside of academia.
Right.
And just the way they work together, and, you know, her kind of almost oblivious frankness, rudeness sometimes,
right.
and him, you know, being the rough, tough cop, and they're both learning from them. The first book in the series is is called The Puppet Show.
Oh, I'm certainly gonna look out for that.
Oh, they're amazing.
Sounds fantastic. Amazing. I remember
he won the Golden Dagger last year.
Oh wow, that's impressive.
Writers Association awards for the puppet show, and I think there's three or four in the series now, but they are just an absolute addiction of mine.
I'll certainly look out for them. I was chatting to Lisa Cutts, who was a detective and turned crime writer. I asked her once, what do you think the most realistic police TV series on television is? And she thought about it and she said, do you remember the Jasper Carrot one? she thought that was more like it. What would you say to that? Do you enjoy the TV, or are you just looking for faults and, you know, mistakes? Is there anything you enjoy?
Yeah, I'm not sure I look for them, but they tend to
scream
jump out
at you. Yeah.
The very, very best TV drama.
Yeah.
Police TV drama is Happy Valley.
Oh, I love that. Wasn't it great?
That is just amazing. That is so...
Yeah.
It's so realistic, yet so dramatic. And, you know, Sarah Lancashire is an amazing
Wasn't
actor.
She fantastic in that? Absolutely fantastic. Before we say goodbye to you, I just would like to ask you another thing. I've been looking at your website, and it really made me laugh. Bartlett's Bloomers.
Bloopers.
The things that go wrong... Give us a quick few examples of them.
Okay, so one of them is, you know, you could leave a £50 note in a police station for 2 weeks and no one would touch it, but just try leaving half a bottle of milk in the fridge or your sandwiches there. You know, police stations aren't crime-free. You cannot download a 2 terabyte computer onto looking around for a USB stick. I haven't got one immediately. On a USB stick, in the time it takes for somebody to go to the toilet, which is often what we see. You can't get the. I'm not sure all of these are actually on there, but these are. I've got so many of these, but you can't get fingerprints from wood. You know, you have to have a smooth, non-absorbent surface for fingerprints. You know, don't you dare try and... Oh, this is... I'm going to put this a different way. You know, you can be the best detective in the world, like maybe Luther or Vera or someone like that, but I'm sorry, you're still not coming into my crime scene unless you're head-to-toe in white forensic suits, because you will shed DNA.
Right.
And that will offset the investigation. I could go on and on and on. There are so many.
They're fantastic, but that last one must really bug you, because you do see, you know, the head detective kind of breaking through the crime ribbon and just striding around, and you're thinking, hang on a minute, everyone else is in white hazmat suits, and you're just being ridiculous, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a fabulous clip that I'm sure I use it on the crime weekend. It's from a Fly on the Wall documentary, and it actually shows a senior investigating officer going to a crime scene and inspecting the crime scene. And the reason I show it is because she is literally head to toe in white.
Uh-huh.
She's walking on these stepping plates that they put out, so she's not disturbing anything. Everything is videoed. It's actually quite dull.
Yes.
Because she's going around with a crime scene manager. They're talking about everything.
Yeah.
You can hear them talking about it. You know, I know that's not dramatic, and I know people don't want to see that. But, you know, give a nod to it. I mean, in Scott and Bailey, which is another Sally Wainwright drama like Happy Valley is, you know, they wear the stuff, and they, you know, I think they might have their hoods down, which, you know, in TV drama you want to see their faces, so that's fine. But, you know, in Scott and Bailey they did enough to show that they knew what they were doing, but
exactly,
a bit of poetic license. You know, poor old Vera, you know, with her all she does is snap on a pair of gloves, maybe some overshoes, and let her lovely hat do the rest of the protection.
Well, honestly, they are hilarious, and I urge everyone to go on your website and have a look. And anyone
who's
interested in writing about crime, please go on to Graham's website. We'll put the address in the show notes at the end of the thank podcast. You. And Graham, I'd just like to say thank you so much for joining us. You've been absolutely fascinating and we could talk
thank
for
you.
Ages.
Thank you,
thank you very much.
Thank you and really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Thank you.
Hi guys, just want to say thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. You people are the reason we continue doing this and we love you. And Christy, how could everyone support us?
Yes, thank you everybody. The way that you guys can best support us is by liking, subscribing, reviewing and sharing. We're on Apple, we're on Spotify, we're on CastBox, iHeartRadio, etc. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, The Yank and the Limey, where if you want to interact, questions, comments, feedback, please feel free to message us.
We love a bit of feedback, don't we?
We love feedback and we love questions, especially interesting ones.
And you know the best thing about the podcast? It's all free.
It's free.
So you don't have to pay anything. Please subscribe.
Thanks, guys.